NFL on Fox calling Tennessee New England this weekend.
Ooh.
It's the
one.
Fourth member of our team, Charles Davis. Good morning.
Good morning, Charles.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Charles, I need to ask you something serious. Are the Bills back?
But that was nice last night, wasn't it?
Oh, was it ever?
That was nice last night. Back is probably, you know, in this league, I hate to sound like every coach there week to week and all that, but that sure was nice. That sure looked like a team that understood where they were in the season, that understood what was needed, what they needed to get to. And what I liked most about last night was running backs actually running the football. I felt like Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, really took a nice little examination of the team and said, okay, we know what a weapon Josh is running the ball. I really want to make sure these running backs get the ball and the defenses have to start respecting that. Look, save a couple throws by Josh last night. They were really, really good. And Dawson Knox continues to prove what I thought he would be in preseason. I said it everywhere I went. People looked at me like I was like I had that song in my head. But no, he has really come on. He's come back from the broken hand. I think that this team really started to look the part again last night. And I think this sprint to the end between them and New England is going to be so much fun. It just is. This AFC East is, you know, listen, a lot of my years have been New England and Chase. Not this year. This year we've got a true bona fide, two big-time teams going at each other down the stretch. Those two games are going to be titanic.
Yeah, the Bills will get the Patriots at home for the Monday night or December 6th, and then again in Foxborough on Boxing Day. So a couple of big ones there, a couple of marquee dates. So I'm looking at that Bills game last night, Charles, and obviously that's a great performance. You can only beat the teams in front of you. But when I'm thinking about concerns I have with the Bills, especially with these games coming up ahead against New England, and maybe to a lesser extent Carolina, if McCaffrey's healthy there, it's that the running defense has been really good against poor rushing teams and pretty poor against good rushing teams. There's the Tennessee example, the Indianapolis yeah. example, even the KC example in a win. Do we learn anything from a game last night where it's, you know, Tony Jones Jr., the third string running back, and then Ty Montgomery chipping in? You know, I guess if you're the Bills, how do you address your weaknesses in a week where they're not really tested?
No, excellent question, and I would tend to go a little bit negative town here. That no, you really didn't learn much because exactly what you said, they didn't present their best. I mean, Mark Ingram, who they just traded back for, he didn't get to play. Alvin Kamara, of course, did not get to play. So you weren't exactly going up against Murderer's Row. So no, you don't learn. Do you feel better about yourself? Yes, of course. Any performance where you play better and you do things better than you did before, you take that with you. But they're smart enough to know, yeah, that wasn't exactly Jonathan Taylor, was it? Okay, so let's pump the brakes a little bit. We made some adjustments. We're starting to do things better. We like that. Now we have to do it when it's for real, when we see the Patriots rushing attack come at us. He said, as you noted, when McCaffrey comes at us, that's when we'll know we're starting to get it again. So I think your point is well taken, and I think the Bills are smart enough to understand that as well.
So if we're doing the teams we might have learned something about yesterday, I don't know if we're throwing the Bills at the top of the pile. I don't think that we're putting anything from that first game. Like, I don't know. Yeah, the Lions are the Lions. They're just the Lions. It's just the Lions are the Lions, and that's going to be eternal for me anyways. The Cowboys and the Raiders. I think that's the game that we maybe read the most into because it was a weird one. And if you're a Cowboys fan, I know you're going to make excuses. You're going to say things like, well, the offensive line has been beat up and, you know, we didn't have CeeDee Lamb and we didn't have Amari Cooper and Zeke is not right. His lower body isn't all the way there. But I couldn't help but come away from that game feeling like there was something lacking from the offense. Because the defense, I said earlier on the show, I'm giving them some reprieve considering the way that they played against Kansas City a week prior and being on a short week and some of that stuff. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you disagree with that. But there's just something about the offense right now, even with knowing about those receivers being out, that doesn't feel right to me. And I wonder what you make of just this little skid that the Cowboys are on.
Well, I think that let's leave it on the offensive side. That let's leave it with Zeke and Pollard, because I think that it's an offense that may be a little bit in transition and not willing to go full on in the transition. I think that my colleagues, I saw Coach Cower and Nate and Phil and Boomer and JB talking about who is truly the lead runner for Dallas now. Mm. Because Zeke has the contract, Zeke has the reputation, Zeke has the skins on the wall. But Tony Pollard's the best runner for them right now. Do you make that full transition and make him the lead guy? That's hard to do. You know, the Cowboys are very much an organization that star on the side of the helmet, they take it seriously if that star is next to your name. And it's hard for them to say, okay, guess what, Zeke, you're not that guy anymore. That would be difficult. And it's hard for me to do. I'm sitting there fighting it, you know. I'm sitting there going, I just don't know, maybe a little bit. But Pollard right now is their better runner. So he should probably touch the ball a little bit more. And I think that you run into that, like down the stretch. You remember down the stretch they ran that screen to Zeke and he gets tackled?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that Pollard breaks it for a touchdown, but it feels just a step quicker, a step faster right now to where you need to be. Then maybe he should be running some more of those plays and maybe not. Zeke, the 100-yard kickoff return, great blocking, but still, was there not a whoosh factor? Mm-hmm. To Pollard taking off on that. I mean, there's just something going on there. So does that cure everything for them? The answer is no. They still need CeeDee Lamb back. They need Amari Cooper, you know, to clear protocols and make his way back and so on and so forth. But I think that's part of what you're talking about with that offense right now. You know, sometimes teams like the Cowboys who value their star power, value their loyalty, sometimes they don't get where they need to be as quick as they need to because they hang on to those guys for a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And I admire that in the business world. I admire that in life. In sports, which are Darwinian, sometimes you got to be a little bit quicker on that one. Now, that's not to say Zeke doesn't still have it. Maybe he's just a little dinged up. But you better ride what you need right now because, look, how many weeks ago did I say this division was done, right? The Cowboys could have it clinched. I think I said something like by Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, I look up. Think of it this way, guys. If Philadelphia beats the Giants this weekend, which I fully expect them to do, and I believe you do as well, they're within two games of the Cowboys down the stretch. It felt like the chasm between the two of them was as wide as any canal you wanted to pick. Suez, Erie, Panama. Pick one, right?
There's only three I know, so that's good.
Right in this case now, all of a sudden, folks, the collar tightens a little bit. Like, what? We got a race?
Uh-huh.
That's where we're headed right now. Philadelphia wins this weekend. I think that they will.
So I actually really like this discussion about just like a shifting identity. I'm not so worried about having Zeke and Pollard if they're splitting them. Although when I see that Pollard only actually had 10 carries yesterday, I go, that's got to be more. But this actually gets to one of my biggest points of frustration with the Cowboys over the last couple of seasons, and I really hadn't thought about it this way until, you know, you're kind of presenting it that way, which is that, hey, you know when the Cowboys were awesome? You know when we all sort of fell in love with the Cowboys? It was because the offensive line was great and they ran behind Zeke, and then Dak didn't have to be the primary figure in the offense. He was someone where it was like, hey, we've got third and short, or we're throwing play action, and you're surprising the rest of the league. And since Kellen Moore has taken over as the OC, and it's been this, okay, like Kellen Moore, everybody loves Kellen Moore, Kellen Moore, Kellen Moore, Kellen Moore, let's draft receivers, let's go big, we're going to be this running gun offense, constantly just throwing down the field. Gallup is our third receiver, now even I'm blanking on CeeDee Wilson or
Cedric Wilson. Cedric Wilson.
Yeah, we're going, wow, even this guy's a weapon in the passing game. Schultz looks good in the passing game. Ultimately, I sort of feel like if the Cowboys have to be a passing team behind Dak Prescott, that they're not going to be able to win that way. That you can get away with that for a certain extent, but just that maybe Dak isn't quite that level of a guy. We keep trying to put him in that top echelon of quarterbacks because his statistics, they tell us that he's there. But when I watch these games, there's always that little bit of, you know, Dak is maybe top 10, but I don't view him as the guy that you necessarily build an offense around.
Did the throw in overtime help you get where we are right now?
No, I'm not saying
that with any criticism at all. It's just that throw I'm thinking is sticking in your head because I believe it's sticking in all of our heads. Would I be somewhat accurate?
I swear, Charles, it's not just that. It's just there's just this overall, I feel like throughout year after year after year, I've watched Dak put together some really impressive statistical games, but there's always usually a feeling of wanting. You know what I think his best game was that playoff game against Seattle, where it felt like, oh, wow, he really took the reins. He kicked the ass of a Seattle team. He was the reason that they won that football game. And that version of Dak Prescott, I thought, was going to kind of evolve. And I don't really feel that way. And I know he's had the injury, but I was joking about this earlier. He always feels like he's got almost some of the worst pocket presence in the NFL, like the decisions to run. And I'm always like, is he athletic? Is he not athletic? Can he move? Can he? I don't love the guy. I like the guy. I think he's good. I think we all root for him. But I just don't see him as the guy I think Dallas wants him to be, which is one of the best 5-6 quarterbacks in the NFL. I think he's just in that tier below, which you can win with. I just don't know if you're always leading with it or trying to build an identity around it.
Let me summarize and see and tell me if I'm on track with you. If Pollard touches the ball more and Dallas does understand their identity a little bit better, which is
run.
You can run the football at times where you want to throw it.
Yes.
Okay. You're throwing it like crazy. And Dak continues to play the level he's playing. And now some of his throws aren't third and 10 as much more third and 5, third and 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're thinking maybe he could bump up a couple notches on that tier. Am I on track there?
Yes.
And I think that you're right. And I actually think that you're right. I don't think that you're wrong at all. I think for most quarterbacks out there, that ability to throw off of play action, to throw into better down and distance situations, to throw on first down and 10 rather than third down and 10 will make them better quarterbacks. Sometimes the play callers get caught up in other things. Sometimes they look at their talent that's out there and they say, I've got to play to that, and that's where my strength is today, and don't make the transition even when it's right there in front of them. We run into a lot of those things, and sometimes we forget, and I'll leave it with Kellen Moore. He's still a young play caller. Okay, I know he gets a lot of attention, a lot of acclaim, and rightly so, because he is a big-time offensive mind. And when you sit and spend time with him, which I've been able to do, you come away very impressed. You remember him as a college player who won games at a level that surpasses his talent by a factor of 1,000. Okay, wherever you guys are spaced right now talking to each other, Kellen couldn't throw it from either one of you, okay? His teams won 50 games when he was in college. They went 50-3 with him as a college quarterback. They beat teams like Georgia, Virginia Tech at their heyday. I mean, you name it. By the way, he was not the quarterback when they beat Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. I know a lot of people go, oh, yeah, he beat Oklahoma. No, he was not that quarterback. But he won 50 games and 53 starts because he won it with pre-snap reads, understanding coverages, anticipation where the ball should go, and understanding that receiver should be open at this point and get rid of the ball and let the ball be there when the receiver got there. That's why he couldn't play in the NFL. Didn't have enough arm strength and the DBs could come get the football very quickly. But offensive mind, oh, he's got it. And he's still learning his way along too. So I think that the Cowboys make the transition. They're going to need to because now they're in a race. Okay, that's where I am on all of that. I think that their defense is coming along better, but Anthony Brown's going to have a tough week because all those defensive pass interference calls. People could be upset, but every one of the calls was legit. And I know the last one really drove Jerry Jones crazy. Would he call it throw up football, just throw it up and we get a call? That is the version of what basketball's trying to get out, which is, you know, you fake the guy in the air and then you jump into him and draw the foul, what the basketball's trying to get out of it. But in football, it's there. The receiver knew it. He never turned his head. He came back into him, and the flag came out, and there's no way you couldn't make that call.
So JD kind of described Dak Prescott as a guy who he doesn't think is as good as his stats. Another popular name in that regard this season has been Kirk Cousins, who statistically and by some of the more advanced metrics has been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And some of that is avoiding mistakes rather than making plays. But the Vikings are going into San Fran this weekend, a place that's been reportedly interested in Kirk Cousins a number of times in the past. So what do you think is on the line for Cousins in terms of, hey, the discussion around him and the Vikings, if suddenly the Vikings are back above 500 and beat a team like the 49ers on the road?
Let's start with the idea that San Francisco liked him, et cetera. That was a couple of years ago. That's no longer on the table because of the drafting of Trey Lance.
Mm-hmm.
So that part is gone. What's on the line for Kirk Cousins is, can he win a game that they absolutely need to win because they're kind of back in the playoff race? I don't think that they chased down Green Bay despite beating them last week because the gap's big. But at the same time, are they back in the playoff race in the NFC? The answer is yes. And he's had his teams there before. For Kirk Cousins to erase all of this that gets discussed is winning bigger games in the playoffs, advancing deep in the playoffs, getting to the Super Bowl, all those things. Remember, he was brought into Minnesota to be the last piece. I mean, it's hard to believe where we're sitting right now with the Vikings, but just three seasons ago, he was the piece to get them to the Super Bowl. That's how good they were. Remember, they got to an NFC Championship game with Case Keenum, and they decided, nope, we need another quarterback. Case Keenum gone, here comes Kirk Cousins. His record in prime time, his record in the bigger games is not that great. It's not always fair to a quarterback. It's not like a starting pitcher in baseball. But there is an element of that with him. And San Francisco is a great test case because Nick Bosa is back rushing the quarterback really well. San Francisco's played better in recent weeks. But if somehow Minnesota beats San Francisco, are we really going to jump up and down in full acclaim considering how San Francisco's played overall this season? Probably not. They are playing better, but they still have some things to prove as well. But Kirk Cousins is your quintessential, does everything right, the most earnest guy you will ever meet. You sit in a production meeting with him and you just, you know, this guy has got it all. He takes responsibility, he leads, he does things. They just need to win bigger games and get deeper into playoffs. And I don't know if even the way he's playing right now, if this team overall is equipped to be that team to make that kind of run.
Makes sense to me. Charles Davis, NFL on Fox. You've got Titans Patriots this weekend at 1 p.m. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning. We always appreciate it and feel a little better when you're coming to us on East Coast time instead of West Coast time this week.
Yay. I'm always happy to do that. Real quick on the web. A-list, you're a Dartmouth grad, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Did you celebrate the Big Green, another Ivy title in football?
I did, Charles. I'm so glad you brought it up.
You beat Princeton head-to-head. I know the Ivy League still awards, you know, co-championships. Mm-hmm. But you beat Princeton head-to-head. Back-to-back Ivy titles for the Green. Head coach Buddy Tevens, one of my favorite people in the world. Very good friend. So
he's a wonderful coach. Yeah, thank you. Right. I take a lot of pride in the fact that we're back-to-back Ivy League champs.
No,
we're the champs. Charles Davis said it, then we trust him.
You see, I dropped that tie bomb in there. I'll let you guys work that part out. JD, Blake, A-list, you guys take care of yourself. We'll talk next week.
You too. Thanks, Charles.
See you, man.
Oh, the best.
The best.
Knows everything about football.
Knows everything. And gave me a little Ivy League shout out. So
here, after I promised the listeners
we were done with Ivy League football. I didn't even pay him to do that.
Yeah.
He brought it up himself. We had no earlier correspondence.
So, couple quick things off of Charles.
Take that, Ross Tucker.
Yeah, that's right. Take that, Ross Tucker. Honestly. Ross Tucker, he of potentially not sending us our Take 5 bars.
Anyone have a status update on the Take 5 bars?
Still no tracking number from Ross. So, number one, the Kirk Cousins thing. I'm going to try to do this like a traditional in like an American. I got 30 seconds on the clock. The reason why Kirk Cousins doesn't get respect is because you can give me all those analytics. There's only one stat that matters for quarterbacks, and that's wins. How's that?
That was great. And a bit quick, though. You had a couple.
It's okay.
20 more seconds.
But I actually feel this way with Kirk because, well, one, he actually threw a backbreaking interception last week against the Green Bay Packers that they were so fortuitous to get back. And I'm thinking about the way the narrative is different if that actually gets called that way. But seriously, this is kind of a Leaf situation where you go, okay, that's great. You know, you put up stats. Mitch Marner, it's cool. What about in the playoffs? Did you win any meaningful games? No? Okay, then who cares? And that's how I feel about Kirk Cousins is, you have really good offensive weapons. You have a coordinator that has had a lot of success offensively throughout the NFL. You're paid $30 million a season. And so maybe do we disrespect you a little bit too much? Do we throw Kirk Cousins' name into the lesser light quarterback conversation at times when we really shouldn't? Sure. But he's basically lost every big game that he's ever played in, and his team is still not above 500 this year. They've lost in close in a lot of these football games because of his inability to elevate the play. And so it reminds me a little bit of our New York Islanders high danger chances discussion where you go, hey, it can be a little bit of the truth. Kirk Cousins is throwing the ball downfield this year. He's throwing the ball downfield a lot more. But also the Vikings have been asking him to do that year over year over year, and now he's finally doing it, and they have these elite weapons, and he's having some success. I don't care how many stats Kirk Cousins has. There's this like outside fringe discussion about how, well, if he wins this weekend, could he be in the MVP conversation? It's like, what are we talking about? No, it's like, absolutely not. Aaron Rodgers is in the same division as him. We're so bored. Aaron Rodgers balled out last weekend. His team is dominating them in the standings.
With a fractured toe, nonetheless.
The idea that those two guys, we saw what the Packers looked like when they lost Aaron Rodgers. Jordan Love comes in, first round pick. They can't get a first down. The idea that Kirk Cousins would somehow even be in the same stratosphere right now as Aaron Rodgers is hilarious to me. It just shows you that, you know, we get way too, that analytics and numbers, and I shouldn't say analytics, but just like statistics in general. Statistics can often not just tell us the truth either. They can actually lead us down the path of narratives.
Yeah, Blake.
No, this is actually a more me problem, because sometimes it's not framed that way until the dumbos like me go, so what are you saying here? And they're like, nothing. We're just presenting you with data. I'm like, are you saying Kirk Cousins MVP? Like, that's, so it's more of a me problem. I'm just saying that it is a little ridiculous to me that, well, it's a state of two things. One, that we just have such a lack of an MVP picture that we have to do things like, is Kirk Cousins the MVP on his Vikings team that loses almost more than half the weeks? Because he's got nerd stats that we understand, but I don't know what exactly do some of them mean. And then two is just that, simply put, that guy needs to win football games. This is that, that's what it's all about for Kirk Cousins. This is not about individual stats or anything among, it's just about, can you win in big spots? Can you make Vikings fans feel as though if you not only make the playoffs, you can win playoff games because of your quarterback? And I don't think anybody really feels that way as of right now.
That's something to chew on for sure.
That's what we're chewing on?
I mean, we didn't introduce it as no, it being time for something to chew
like
on, brought to you by
that
Great Canadian Meats.
As a way to segue.
Because I got another thing to chew on.
Let's hear it. This is something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Charles just said something to me that I didn't realize was a big problem until he said it. And that's what I love about great, insightful guests like that. And this is something to chew on. The NBA has been a much better product since they got rid of those stupid fouls. Honestly. And there's a little bit of regression that's going to happen with them, where you watch the NBA right now and they're not calling them to such a degree that defenders are starting to take a little bit more liberties with hand checking out on the perimeter
and avoiding people in the eyes.
You really notice it right now, which actually makes it even worse for the Raptors, how their defense is bad, is that it's like, guys, you can basically cheat and they're not even doing it. So there's going to be regression, but right now I love it. I like a league where there's not a lot of calls. And I will say this about that Cowboys game. Were those correct calls? Could you say that Brown, I forgot his first name already.
Anthony
Brown, that he did pass interfere on some of those plays? For sure. But the NFL definitely needs to do a better job of these uncatchable balls, because
I thought that's the rule, right?
Exactly.
There was one last weekend, and I forget the context of it, but the ball was overthrown by like 8 yards out of the back of the end zone. And it's like, who was catching that?
Yep.
LeBron's not catching that.
And that's all I have for you to chew on today. It's just simply, it's time. We do all these rules with the NFL. Hey, what's a catch? What isn't a catch? Can you review pass interference? Can you not? How about just this? How about stop bailing out receivers on pass interference calls when the ball is completely uncatchable, or the play is a completely broken down play where the quarterback is throwing the ball away? That's not that hard to tell. Or at least it shouldn't be, because it's not that hard to tell on television. And you as a group of officials should be able to come together, talk it out, and say, hey, was there interference? Sure. But is there holding just about on every play? Can we not call holding on just about every play? Yes, we can.
Or that false start with the head nod.
Yes. Can we just be a little bit more cautious of what is actually happening in the game when we make these pass interference calls? Can we just have that? Please. That's all.
The NBA, by the way, lowest free throw rate in league history.
Yeah.
Right now.
Chef's kiss.
Not a lot of people complaining out there that I've seen.
Yeah. Is any other than James Harden and Steve Nash?
Even James Harden is getting like double digit free throw attempts a lot of nights.
So, he's the only guy that I remember complaining, though, about the actual officiating. And Steve Nash, too. The two guys in Brooklyn, they
Steve Nash, who called what Trae Young does, not basketball. Huh. But now you coach James Harden, so yeah. that's purest basketball.
I learned it from you.
NBA, lowest free throw rate in league history right now. Offense is down, but that's mostly because of three-point swings. Nobody really complaining about fewer foul calls. Something to chew on for the NFL.
Something for you to chew on officials.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yeah. Chew on those officials. And that one guy who just ate it on Tony Pollard's kickoff return touchdown. That guy was chewing on
blindsided
turf.
By the what is that thing? The line marker? The whatever.
The pylon?
Pylon. He just got blindsided.
Yes. Poor the pylon.
Guy. All right. We're going to talk a little more basketball. Maybe we're going to answer some of your texts.
Yeah,
we're also going to give away some Leaf tickets. Ooh. All that stuff is coming up. And then we got a loaded second half of the show with guests. We got Jennifer Botterill coming on. We got Coolbeck Chris. We got Amy Audibert from the Raptors broadcast. And we'll close it up with Sean Avery. All that today on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
So we got a text in that I think you'll like, Blake. 590-590. Keep
probably
your text
not.
Coming in.
I rarely like them.
This is good. This is
Do you
good.
Know Blake at all?
This is good. Just stay with it, Blake. Yeah. Don't get
Who's
offended. No name.
Uh-oh.
Ready?
Anonymous
Dude,
jabroni.
What the heck? I was watching Blake on Tim and Friends yesterday, and it's the first time I've ever seen what he looks like. His voice sounds like a four-eyes pocket protector wearing nerd. But he looks Accurate. Like a dude that knocked the kids' books out of their hands in the hallway, then stole their lunch money.
Yeah.
This is the thing. I don't know who that's from, obviously. But one of the most like chilling memories that I have and something that's stuck with me and gives me a ton of anxiety when I'm doing these radio and especially accepting this job is there was like a friend of mine from Raptors Twitter who I'd never met in person. We met at a Jeff Rosenstock show a couple years ago and we met in line and we hung out for a bit. And then I went off with my friends and it was nice and whatever. And then I look at Twitter later after the concert and he had been like tweeting about how my voice doesn't match what I look like. And he told me the other day, he's like, don't worry about your voice. You sound like a child and they gave you a radio show. So apparently that's it.
This is one of those things where when you know somebody for a while, you don't even think about it. Mm. Like, I think I've told you guys before that I have a friend who has an accent and I don't even hear the accent. Mm-hmm. Where people go, oh, where are you from? And I go, oh, right. People that are new with this guy ask where he's from. I don't even hear it.
But so you no longer hear that I sound like a dork.
I think you sound like a dork because of the things you say, not because of the sound of your voice. And I like all of the things you like and do and the way you act. It's just like all those things. That's where your dorkiness comes from, not the tone of your voice.
Also, Scott in Stouffville says, love, keep the bangers coming. Love all killer, no filler. Yeah, thanks. No problem, Scott.
Everybody loves that album. Can I ask you guys a question before we do Raptors?
You bet.
Yeah.
Are you guys getting killed by Black Friday sales? Because I am.
I keep putting things in my cart and then being like, stop. I don't need that thing.
I am the ultimate sucker when it comes to sales. Like, I am the person.
You're spending $200 to save $10, and that's $200 you wouldn't have spent otherwise? So you think you're saving $10,
like, oh,
but
I
really
totally
you're just spending
these.
$200 extra?
I don't want to even talk about things. I'm just spending
Run
money.
The analytics on those deals and purchases, JD.
I saw a tweet once that said, I use Apple Pay like it's Apple paying for my stuff.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Apple.
And that is totally me during the Black Friday sales. And I'm doing completely irresponsible things like...
Yesterday you were showing me a bunch of joggers during the break.
Yeah. No, I
got that banana sweater with the little banana pouch you recommended.
But I think that the price of that item shows you the kinds of websites that I'm looking at. And it's
that was on a site that you were looking at?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh. JD sent us a text last
night. Don't say what it was.
No, I'll just say. He sent us a text last night of the screenshot of something that was over $1,000.
Oh,
a sweater.
I meant that don't say the price.
Oh, I didn't even notice the price. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
It was ridiculous. And it was a hideous sweater. Like, it's got holes in it.
Yeah, like
it's
Russell Westbrook would look at this and be like, dude, you're trying way too hard.
I know.
And I thought you were kind of kidding, but I was a bit worried that maybe you weren't kidding.
No, I was kidding.
I missed the price on that.
Yeah. No, the price is $2,000 sweater.
I thought we were just looking at how dumb it was.
No, the sweater, for those of you that can't see it, is it's like it's a sweater, but it's a tank top. And it's got holes in it, and it's $2,000.
I have no idea what temperature you would be able to wear that in.
Yeah.
Because it's too warm for summer. It's a sweater.
Yeah.
But if you wore it in the fall or the winter, it's a borderline tank top.
I just think there should be laws against exploiting people like me. You know, I just feel like there should be, there should be protections.
I haven't bought anything yet. Like I've kept my eyes on things, but there's nothing that I'm like, that's a huge deal. I need it.
I have to talk to my financial advisor soon.
Trouble.
And I actually feel like, you know, when you'd go to the dentist and you have them flossing and maybe you guys don't because you guys have perfect teeth and they're like.
I was actually at the dentist yesterday.
Yeah, I know. Blake's going today. You guys are just always at the dentist for two people.
Well, I got to pick up my.
Pocket protector.
Yeah, what do you have to pick up, Blake? Getting a mouth guard.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, I've been grinding my teeth.
Getting a mouth guard.
Yeah. Because of you two.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I got to pick up a mouth guard. It's not my proudest thing. Yeah. I also wear permanent retainers if you want to pick
Blake.
On that.
Yeah.
But look at these teeth.
And suspenders.
The results don't lie. Look at these things.
Suspenders and tidy whities, and he's got the whole kit. So I don't know. I want someone to intervene, and I'm worried about my financial advisor chastising me going, sorry, you spent what on what? And I'm like, you know. And my answer is always, well, I don't have kids. It's all for me. I don't have family. I get to spend my money just on me. I get to be selfish. And they're like, yeah, well, guess what? It's only ever going to be you because you're strapped.
Paycheck to paycheck until you die.
You're an idiot.
Okay, before we talk about real sports, Jordan and Saga text us every day. Loyal listener. No, it's not my brother.
I know, but it's a funny
bit. Every time you ask.
I know, but it's a funny bit to do.
Blake's voice definitely doesn't match his appearance. He's a media member, Mike Tyson.
Hmm.
I think that's accurate.
All right. Well, fire up the face tattoo.
Yeah.
You do have tattoos.
Yeah.
You just migrate them up to your neck. Your face.
I mean, the arms are almost done, so.
Almost done?
Well, the right arm has one more session. The left arm will have a little bit more, but I don't have the idea crystallized.
What if
the
you just
arm.
Put JD and I's faces on your arm?
I'll pay for it.
I would chop my arm off.
Come on. Text in ideas for Blake's tattoos.
I just assume that you
would. Please do not.
I just assume that you were going full sleeves and that you would just be kind of a never ending tattoo person.
Well, I mean, yeah.
You have an end date in sight. You're retiring from tattoos? Well,
no, but I will eventually run out of space on this arm. I'm almost out.
Yeah, but I'm saying you're not really if you've seen sleeves before.
If you think you're cool, you got to get a thigh tat.
You have a thigh tat?
No. I only have my arms at my back.
You know what you should get? You should get, like, on your thigh. Like those little
$5.90, $5.90.
You know, the little bullet garter belt thing.
Ew.
That people get. Who thinks?
Sometimes, here's the issue is that if I were to get a thigh tattoo, it's going to cost me a fortune because I have very large thighs.
Yeah.
Thick thighs save lives.
Yeah. Okay. We now only have 7.5 minutes left
in
my Raptors block.
Yeah.
And that's.
We talked about you the whole time. Whatever.
Yeah, but I wanted to. Talk about the Raptors. They're back in action.
You're the
tonight.
One soaking up all the time talking about your thighs and tattoos.
All right.
Or
and
we also, have to give Leafs tickets away in a minute
tickets.
Here. So,
hey, everybody, my thighs are so big. Oh, you didn't give me enough time to talk about the Raptors.
Oh.
So bad now.
The Toronto Raptors are back in action tonight. They are 3.5-point dogs at the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers have looked a little better of late. They're back to health now, except for TJ Warren. So you've got Caris LeVert back. You've got Malcolm Brogdon back. They've looked a little bit better than the bad, bad, bad Pacers that we saw for a lot of the season. They beat the pants off the Pelicans, hammered our Bulls, and then took the Lakers to overtime the other night in the Lakers game where they had LeBron James. So Pacers trending upward. Raptors will be without Ken Birch. OG Anunoby questionable for a third consecutive game, which I don't know. I kind of hope that means he's back at some point. I don't know how long he can be questionable. But again, to reset what we talked about yesterday, the Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Scottie Barnes, Pascal Siakam foursome, that is whatever you think of Gary Trent and Ken Birch and what else is happening up and down the rotation, it's how those four guys look and blend together that is the most important takeaway from this Raptor season. They've played 52 minutes together so far. Those have been 52 neutral minutes, but I don't really care what the data says in a 52-minute sample for a four-guy split. We just need to see more of it. The other thing we maybe need to see more of tonight is Scottie Barnes. The Raptors have beat the Pacers twice already this year, and they were both very big Scotty Barnes games. I don't know what it is about Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner, but they're big Scotty Barnes games. I don't think the player... Oh, we do have the player props up. Look at that. Wow. So here's what I want to throw at you guys. Mm. Scotty Barnes over-under tonight for points plus assists plus rebounds is 24.5.
Yep.
He's had two monster games against the Pacers.
Done.
What do you think?
I'm in. You just sold me on it. You hype up the games. You hype up his history playing this team. You say,
I mean, it's only a two-game sample, though.
Yeah, well, that's more than
zero games. So his lines against the Pacers were 18.7 rebounds, 7 assists.
Okay.
And 21 points, 12 rebounds, 1 assist.
Okay. I was just going to say.
Maybe now I'm a little less confident.
No, what? I was just going to say that I.
Both of those stat lines blow away the over-under. Why would that make
you? 18.
18.7 rebounds, 7 assists. It's a points plus rebounds plus assists.
You spoke too fast, sorry.
Oh, so he's had 32 and 33.
Okay, then yes.
Against Indiana, and the over-under is 24.5.
Done.
I actually have played a lot of Scotty Barnes rebound props this year, and it's usually a pretty good bet. And I would sort of feel as though tonight is one of those nights where you can probably grab his number. I'm guessing around 6.5.
It's 7.5, but it's plus 110 on 7.5 rebounds.
So it should be plus 6.5, and they're just not letting you bet it.
Yeah. 10 times this year he's hit the over on 7.5.
It's been a very much so. My brother and I, the Scotty Barnes rebound prop has basically been our entire friendship.
That's the inheritance now. Money.
We don't have a single conversation other than Scotty Barnes rebound prop night, and we do that.
Yeah, so, that's like me and my brother, but it's Trevor Lawrence interception props.
Yeah.
Since we're both Jaguars fans.
I got to tell you, I got to wait until what's going on with OG tonight.
Sure.
Because if OG comes back, I have to believe there's at least a scenario where Barnes slides to the bench, given the way that Gary Trent has played. I don't know. And I know Cam is out, but maybe they're still sticking with Precious in here. I just need to see what it actually looks like and what the rules are, because it does feel like Scotty has been getting pinched a little lately when it comes to the offense. Not so much the rebounding, but just his role in those first two games against the Pacers feels like it could be pretty drastically different than what his role is now against the Pacers, even in a scenario where there is no OG and Anunoby.
So if we get into
what's his usage rate dip?
So when we're talking, we'll say that foursome, mm-hmm. OG, Fred, Pascal, Scotty Barnes, and we'll add Gary Trent. When any four of those players are on together, Scotty Barnes' usage is 22.2%. He's not the guy that's sacrifice usage. It's tended to be Gary Trent, and then to a lesser...
That can't be true.
It is true.
I'm just joking, because it's like Gary Trent shoots so
much. Well, here's the thing, though, is Gary Trent only gets to shoot if he gets the ball.
Yeah.
And those guys probably understand at this point that, he had four assists last game, but he's not giving it up willingly. But it's actually been Siakam who takes the next biggest usage drop in those groups where multiple starters are in there, multiple starter caliber guys are in there. So it hasn't been Barnes yet. Again, these are tiny samples we're chopping up here, and we really haven't seen Barnes, OG, and Siakam as a trio together much. But so far, it's not Barnes who's losing out on the touches.
So what do you make of Barnes's dip in production then lately?
Just kind of the rookie wall.
It's so early to be rookie walling.
But he's already played as many minutes as he played his entire freshman year.
Yeah, which was none. He didn't play in college.
Right. Basically. But also, it was a shortened season. You don't travel nearly as much. Mm-hmm. And then when I say rookie wall, I don't mean just the minutes load. Mm-hmm. I also mean there's now 17 games of tape on you.
Yeah.
The Pacers have seen you twice. Coaches who, the guys doing the advanced scout to prep for the game have tape on you a little bit. And the best example of that, and it's unfair because he's probably the defensive player of the year so far, but Draymond knew everything that was coming. Mm-hmm. Scotty Barnes scored inside the arc once in that game. Draymond knew where Scotty Barnes is comfortable and where he's not comfortable so far. I thought Barnes had a really nice offensive game Wednesday. So that's a point in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of this too is just rookies are going to go up and down a little bit.
Yeah. And he hasn't looked bad. I don't think that Barnes has had very many awful nights where you go, oof, he's really looking like a rookie tonight. I think it is more just the byproduct of one, expectations and reality. where everyone expected Barnes coming in the year to basically not look, to look like a guy who couldn't even shoot at all. And he proved, hey, I actually have a little bit more offense than you guys basically put me in the pocket of. But I think that it actually did catch defenses by surprise, too. I think that every team that game planned for the Raptors went, we got to slow down OG. We got to slow down Fred. We got to slow down Gary Trent. If we can do that, it's a win for the defense if Scotty Barnes is handling the ball going to the basket. And then they quickly learned that, hey, actually, this guy's competent. We're not just going to let him walk to where he can get that little push shot. And they've adjusted, they've changed it. We talked about it where we said, hey, once defenses put a bigger defender on him and force him a little bit outside the paint, what is the scoring going to look like? And I would say that that is a big reason why, is that his outside of the paint, I'm not there yet.
So go back to that first fast breakdown that I did on SportsNet's YouTube channel about how Scotty was scoring beyond expectations early on. And it was a lot of that. It was a lot of, hey, he's coming in with a head of steam and Vucevic is caught flat-footed because he doesn't anticipate that Scotty Barnes has that floater in his package. Or Scotty Barnes gets a pull-up mid-range shot off against Al Horford because even though Al Horford is really long, he's not navigating that space well enough to respect a Scotty Barnes 20-footer. And I still think, forced to choose, defenses are going to be like, yeah, if Scotty Barnes is taking 18 or 20-foot pull-up jumpers, we'll live with that all day. But yeah, as a big guy, you probably know you got to be up on him a little bit more now. You probably know that on the drive, he can be a little turnover prone, so maybe you don't have to collapse to the paint quite as much. It's going to be a really interesting Scotty Barnes night because Pacers have gotten two looks at him. OG Anunoby is potentially back. And then the Raptors return home Sunday. A couple days after the Raptors return home, the Leafs also return home.
And it'll be a big game on December 1st because we're giving away a pair of tickets to the Maple Leafs December 1st home game against the Colorado Avalanche. All you have to do is download today's episode of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the code word that will be placed throughout the podcast. Finally, you text the code word to 590-590 and you'll be entered for a chance to win. The winner will be selected on Monday, November 29th. So if you want to see the Leafs back on home ice against the mighty Colorado Avalanche, listen to the podcast, listen for my little secret code word that I placed somewhere in there. Text 590-590. I'm a little sneak. You text 590-590 and you could be entered for a chance to win tickets. And I think I'm available that night if you'd like to bring me. Thank you.
Oh, I already tweeted as much.
Well, who would you rather go with?
Yeah, we've discussed this. Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, not actually sneakily Blake, because if I go with him, he's not going to just bury me to everyone there. Hey, this is the only person that I could find to take me.
Oh, one of the greatest women's hockey players of all time. This is some guy I work with who is my 13th choice.
That's right.
One other small basketball note, just because we won't get to talk about it anywhere else. If you are
Amy Otterbird at 9.
Oh, yeah. But it's a college basketball note.
All right.
It's Duke Gonzaga tonight, which is potentially a battle between the top two picks in this year's draft. So if you're looking for something to do after the Raptors game and you're not a Leaf fan, there you go.